No? No? Yes? Okay. Good morning. My name is Joe McCallum, if we've never met, or if we have, I suppose. But this morning, I'm going to be going over 1 Corinthians 10, 14, and sneak into 11 there. But this letter, as a lot of the books in the New Testament are, am I doing this right? Okay, good. Is to the church at Corinth, and they were, decent-sized city. It was also known as being kind of a wild city. They got into a lot of wild stuff, and even though they had, turned their lives over to God, some of those old habits would still creep in. And so a lot of what you see in both 1 and 2 Corinthians is Paul kind of addressing some of these issues of the old lifestyle before you come into relationship with God, sort of coming back to influence how their lives are going now. Earlier, I think it was Adam Estep or Estep? Okay, this guy, Estep, taught on meat sacrifice to idols in 1 Corinthians 8, and that is something that is going to kind of come back up again in this passage. If you're starting to get used to Paul as he writes, sometimes he'll kind of write about something and then go on a side, and then he circles back, and then he goes off to something else, and he's actually going to do that in this passage when he talks about communion. But getting into the first part here, it says, "Therefore, my dear friends, flee from idolatry. I speak to sensible people. Judge for yourselves what I say. It is not the cup of, or is not the cup of thanksgiving for which we give thanks, a participation in the blood of Christ. And is not the bread that we break a participation in the body of Christ. Because there is one loaf, we who are many are one body, for we all share the one loaf." Okay, so he's talking about communion and the idea of taking communion together. This is something that they did, Jesus in the Last Supper gave them the bread and the wine and said, "Do this in remembrance of me," and they did that. He's going to talk a lot more about it, like, really soon, so I'm just not going to talk about it that much, because I don't know who's teaching next, but they'll probably be bitter at me. So we'll just let that come when it does in chapter 11, either in the next week or two. But I shouldn't have picked that color. That's hard to see. Well, it is what it is. Anyway, for now, I think as we're talking about communion and just being a part, we're all one part, taking from the one bread, we're all this one group. That is one of the main benefits, I think, of coming into relationship with God in the first place. So I do put it out there for you to consider. Maybe you've been brought here this morning so that you can consider starting your relationship with God. It's not maybe as complicated as you might think. I mean, just turning to God in a moment at a time, you don't even have to be anywhere specific. You don't have to be with the Holy Person or anything like that. Just as you sit, wherever you sit, even in your mind, just turning to Him, asking for forgiveness for the things you've done wrong. You can start a relationship with Him. Going to heaven forever, that's at least decent, so good. But also, you get to be part of the body of Christ, the group that comes together. It's like a large family where we're all looking out for each other, and that has got to be one of the great benefits of starting that relationship. But we're not going to talk about communion, so onward. Let's instead try to understand this meat sacrifice to idols from the previous passage in 1 Corinthians 8 before we look at our upcoming verses. So in 1 Corinthians 8, 4, it says, "So then about eating food sacrificed to idols, we know that an idol is nothing at all in the world, and that there is no God but one." So, okay. Back in their world, I mean, obviously not as much in our world. They would have, here's the temple to, Zeus or the temple to Aphrodite or whatever it is. And so they would sometimes, the priests of those temples would sacrifice a cow or a lamb or something. And then they were permitted to sell that meat in the market. Like, you're looking to worship Saturn? Get his favor, perhaps? Here is some Saturn steak. You can buy that. And you're kind of worshiping Saturn-ish. And that, was part of their religious practice. They viewed that as kind of like, okay, I'm definitely in need of some help from Mercury right now, so I'll get his meat or whatever it is. And that was part of, how they practiced their religion. It became a bit of a question, you know, what if you have started a relationship with God? I don't really want to worship Saturn anymore. I don't do that. But what about the meat? Because, you know, their grocery store, I don't know, I've never been to Ancient Corinth. Maybe they've got the spirit-free, no idols meat. But, you know, it's probably, you take what's there and it's sacrificed to this idol or that in a lot of cases. And he's like, look, these idols aren't real. There's no idols. There's, you know, there's no God but one. So it's not like you're actually empowering, you know, these various gods by eating it. It says, but not everyone possesses this knowledge. Some people are still accustomed to idols, so that when they eat sacrificed food, they think of it as having been sacrificed to a god. And since their conscience is weak, it is defiled. So this is really the heart of the idea of meat sacrificed idols, where maybe Saturn isn't a real god, but I'm so used to practicing that meat sacrificed to idols is part of the rest of the ceremonies or whatever it is, that when I start to eat meat sacrificed to Saturn, it kind of reminds me of my old lifestyle. It starts to tug on me and kind of pull me back into old habits. Now, again, we don't have the meat sacrificed to idols in our lives, but lots of old habits that fit into the same exact category. Maybe you feel that tug back into the party scene that you used to be a part of. You know, there could be lots of things that trigger it. Maybe it's just going and seeing a movie that has certain things, and that's disturbing to you. Whereas the person sitting next to you doesn't bother them at all. And so it's a matter of conscience as to, well, certain things are triggers which are going to stumble somebody. Certain other things, you know, maybe the same person doesn't have the same reaction to it. But we have to be sensitive to people's conscience, and we don't want to basically put people in a situation where their conscience is going to be tested in a way that they know they have a weakness. So, you know, the same sort of thing. You wouldn't want to be around somebody who was an alcoholic and everybody pulls out their beer winer and just talks about how awesome it is. You know what I mean? Like, that would be potentially stumbling to whoever that is. Why would you do that? You know, be sensitive to the people who are around you, which requires some work, because you have to actually know the people around you, know what struggles they might potentially have. This last part here, it says, food does not bring us near to God. We are no worse if we do not eat, no better if we do. So the issue itself is not one of these like, oh, this is so important. If you don't get this right, this is definitely going to nuke your relationship with God sort of thing. You know, whether you yourself are eating or partaking in these matters of conscience, the fact is, your relationship with God isn't going to be hindered unless your conscience is weak and it's starting to drag you back into old habits. So, our example that I've come up with is, you know, going to a tailgate party. Now, there could be an argument that could be made. Well, okay, so sometimes you go to a tailgate party. I'm a Browns fan. I go up to the Browns games every once in a while. They can be a little nuts. And, you know, oh, well, Jesus went to Matthew's wild party, so maybe it's okay. Of course, I had this friend who lived a very sheltered life, and him being around that stuff, it just really freaked him out. Like, a lot of people swearing, a lot of people drinking. He sees somebody's barfing or something like that, and he's just not into that, and it really, really bothers his conscience to be around that kind of stuff. So for him, it might not be the best. Now, maybe a part of me wants to make fun of him for, why don't you just be a man? But, you know, that's not really productive either. I mean, that's the kind of thing we talk about in these passages, where we're supposed to instead be sensitive to each other's conscience, not use it as an opportunity to, you know, rake each other over the coals. Now, my ex-drug dealer friend, now he felt plenty comfortable going to, you know, he probably is sort of like, I could probably do some business here. And so for him, it might not be good for an entirely different reason. So he's got, you know, this past history. He feels like this might actually start to suck me back into old habits. So for him, it might not be so good either. And it depends on the person. Now, third friend would go to places like this, meet people. be able to get into conversations, tell people about Jesus, and see them come to know God. And for that reason, it's worth sort of considering going to things like this, provided your conscience is tough enough to deal with the atmosphere and not get tempted into some sort of bad activity. And so that's kind of the rub. You know, figuring out how to navigate meat sacrifice to idols is complicated. And, you know, the fact is this issue is really confusing, and it is very, very often misunderstood. Misunderstood in the church, misunderstood even in this church. I'm not like all those stupid churches out there that never understand that, you know. I meet people often, and I even sometimes find myself misunderstanding this issue, misapplying it. It is very easy to blur the line between is this a matter of conscience or is this a matter of morality? And it's worth trying to dig in and understand better this idea, because it has a lot of potential good, and, you know, it has the potential to cause major conflict and alienation. I mean, I think that you can find sometimes people in your own family can really divide over some of these issues. Like, I'm saying that watching this kind of movie is really a matter of conscience. It's not a moral issue. But I have a family member who feels very differently, and that can cause a lot of friction. That can cause a lot of trouble. Understood properly, though, it has the potential to help God's message make it to more people. And that's really what this passage in particular is talking about, as we'll see toward the end. Now, jumping in, it says, "Consider the people of Israel. Do not those who eat the sacrifices participate in the altar?" If you're not really familiar with what he's talking about, in the Old Testament times, you would bring, you know, your sheep or goat or whatever it is. They would sacrifice it. Levitical priests, they would sacrifice it, and some of that meat would go to them, and, you know, so they would have the meat that was sacrificed in the idol just in the same way that they do in these meat markets in Corinth or Rome or wherever it is. So you might start to think, oh, well, if they did it in the Old Testament, it really does have this mystical power, and if I do this, I might be, stumbling into something and causing this spiritual power to overwhelm me. But then he says, no, do I mean that food sacrificed to an idol is anything, or that an idol is anything? No. But the sacrifices of pagans are offered to demons, not to God. And I do not want you to be participants with demons. What? That's scary. What if I did this wrong? What if I messed it up and I accidentally participated with demons? That's why, I mean, I really read through this in my Bible, and I'm kind of, whoa, what? Was I participating with demons last night? I went to that party? I hope not. You know, it can seem very alarming when you're reading something like this. Like, yeah, this is this issue that doesn't matter that much. But if you do it wrong, you're participating with demons. And then here onward, it says, you can drink the cup of the Lord and the cup of demons, too. You can have a part in both the Lord's, or you cannot have part in both the Lord's table and the table of demons. So this, we're going to drink from the cup of demons. We're going to share from the table of demons. This sounds very alarming. You know, you read some of this stuff, and are we trying to arouse the Lord's jealousy? I hope not. You know, are we stronger than he? So these kinds of things, you know, participating with demons, we're going to be drinking for the god of demons. This sounds really scary and really confusing, and it makes this issue, I think this is part of why issues like this can get so confusing, because sometimes people might look in something like this in their Bible and be like, this is crazy demon stuff. I guess I'll just move on and find something I can understand, or, you know, get really frightened by it and decide, oh, this issue's huge. We have to be super serious and hardcore about this, and let's start, you know, really cracking the whip. Otherwise, we'll accidentally eat meat that has demon in it or something like that, and who knows what'll happen once it gets inside of you. Let's just read on a little bit, and I think we'll gain some clarity. I have the right to do anything, you say, but not everything is beneficial. I have the right to do anything, but not everything is constructive. No one should seek their own good, but the good of others. If an unbeliever invites you to a meal, and you want to go, eat whatever is put before you without raising questions of conscience. But if someone says to you, this has been offered in sacrifice, meaning in sacrifice to an idol, then do not eat it, both for the sake of the one who told you and for the sake of conscience. I'm referring to the other person's conscience, not yours. For why is my freedom being judged by another's conscience? If I take part in the meal with thankfulness, why am I being denounced because of something that I thank God for? Okay, so let's double back over some of these verses. We can sort out some of the potential confusion. Just kind of look at them one at a time, see what each one has to say. So our first one here. Remember 19 and just the very beginning of 20. Do I mean that food sacrificed to an idol is anything, or that an idol is anything? No. Okay, so that will teach us, first, the food itself does not actually contain demons, so that's not a thing. I mean, you know, it sounded really alarming when you're reading through that, but if the idols and these things, no, they're not actually anything. And the idol isn't anything. I'm not going to accidentally have, you know, the spirit of Mars is inside of me because I ate meat sacrificed to Mars or anything like that. That whole thing is not really in play. You know, the idols themselves are not real. They don't have power. Neither is the food itself is not anything. And so at least we cleared that up. Moving on to 23, it says, I have the right to do anything you say, but not everything is beneficial. I have the right to do anything, but not everything is constructive. So, well, what does this teach us? Well, the MSI is meat sacrificed to idols. I just didn't have enough room. But meat sacrificed to idols is not a matter of our salvation. You know, if it's going to try to sort out, will you make it into heaven? Will you not make it into heaven? Well, meat sacrificed to idols is not part of that equation. You know, where do you stand with God? Have you made that decision where you come to him and ask for forgiveness for sins? That is what matters. Whether or not you're eating meat sacrificed to idols, whether or not you're listening to this or that music, whether or not you got a tattoo or those sorts of things, those are not going to somehow keep you out of heaven. Like, you're forgiven for everything you do except for all of these gray area things that are arbitrary. No, that's not a thing. This is instead about being constructive in our efforts to share God's message of grace. If we are being more effective, obviously that is for the good. We want the message to make it as far and as wide as possible. Having a better understanding of meat sacrificed to idols is going to help us to make that message spread farther and to keep us from falling back into old habits. So, you know, it's important for those reasons, but not for reasons of this will get you into heaven or not into heaven, that sort of thing. So in verse 27, if an unbeliever invites you to a meal and you want to go, eat whatever is put before you without raising questions of conscience. So, you know, what does this teach us? Well, okay, the eating the meat sacrificed to idols, that's a fine and good thing to do, provided that A, you want to go, and B, you don't raise questions of conscience. So, I mean, that's what that one is saying right there. The provided that you want to go is, you know, that's part of it. I mean, going back to my tailgate illustration, my friend who lived a very sheltered life definitely did not want to go. He didn't. And, you know, maybe I twisted his arm and got him to go a little bit. But, you know, that was something where he was not into that. So, you know what? He shouldn't do it. But if he does want to and, you know, feels like this isn't going to bother my conscience and he's not going to raise questions of conscience, then, yeah, okay, it's fine. Go ahead. And it's even a fine and good thing to do because perhaps while you're there, wherever it is you are, wherever you're, you know, sharing with somebody, a meal with somebody, or maybe it's going to some sort of party or even just sharing interests like music, that might be able to give you an in so that you can share the message of God. So in 28, we have, but if someone says to you, well, this has been offered in sacrifice to an idol, then do not eat it, both for the sake of the one who told you and for the sake of conscience. So what does that teach us? Okay, so this says that, yeah, okay, it's good to go. However, we should be willing to abstain from the meat sacrifice idols. And whenever I'm saying meat sacrifice idols, again, I don't just mean specifically meat sacrifice idols. Maybe I should be willing to abstain from going to, for instance, the tailgate party. Maybe I should be willing to abstain from watching this kind of movie or listening to this kind of music or, you know, participating in this kind of behavior that might have the effect of messing with this other fellow Christian who is disturbed by that sort of thing. So I've got to have a category in my mind of, you know what, yeah, I feel like I'm free to do this, and I'm going to restrain myself from doing it. Not because I feel like it'll affect me, but because the person next to me might be affected. And, you know, that, again, takes a lot of effort because you have to get to know your fellow friends around you and what kinds of things might push their buttons to be able to actually follow this. If you just don't really know anybody that well, you know everybody superficially, it'd be very easy to drag people into matters of conscience that could be very disturbing to them. In 29, it says, I'm referring to the other person's conscience, not yours. For why is my freedom being judged by another's conscience? So what does this teach us? This one right here. Remember this one. 29. Big one. One, each person's conscience is relevant to them and no one else. Now that's pretty big. I mean, why is my freedom being judged by another person's conscience? So that does seem to indicate that no one else's conscience is relevant to me, just as my conscience is not relevant to you. And that is very confusing, especially if you're trying to understand some sort of religious system. A lot of people would probably be like, okay, what's the deal, God? Meat sacrifice to idols, yes or no? And he's like, eh, maybe. That's weird, you know what I mean? Like, normally you think of a religious system as being like, this is what's in, that's what's out, we settled that. Yeah, in this one it's kind of like, maybe it's good, except when it isn't. And that's really annoying. I mean, you know, you have to do some work to be able to figure out, would this be okay? Even if you're kind of like, oh, my conscience isn't bothered, therefore, it's good. No, not good enough, because you still do have to be sensitive to other people's conscience, but I'm not allowed to project my conscience. That's the hard part right there. I can't project my conscience onto somebody else, and neither can they project them onto me. Now, this has got all kinds of potential for problems, and there are problems, many problems, that you'll see in the church that start to spring at this idea right here. So that's why I put this big, annoying, however, there. Because matters of conscience are not the same as matters of morality, okay? That is where there is a difference. Sure, okay. Here, going back. Can I go back? Am I allowed to do that? Oh, good. Why is my freedom being judged by another person's conscience? But what if what if my freedom is being judged by another person's morality? That's not the same thing. That is different. And to be able to think to yourself, well, my conscience that I have inside of me, which tells me what's right and wrong, is not the same as God's morality. Some people don't like to admit that that is the case. I mean, that right there is difficult. I feel so strongly about this, though. Oh, I know that this, you know, I kept seeing friend after friend go, you know, to these parties, and they would stumble and they would fall. Let's never go to a party again. You know what I mean? And I feel so strongly about this that surely my feelings of conviction also apply to you. And it's very natural to feel that way. However, the moral teachings in the Bible, they're clearly taught, you know, matters of conscience are very blurry. I mean, they are not spelled out like, here's how it works for everybody. If you're age 18 to 20, this is how it works. No, it's not like that. I mean, it's very vague. It's very, you know, hard to understand exactly how those apply. Now, what we're talking about, okay, we'll go back to the tailgate example. Getting drunk, yeah, that's morally taught. We don't have to wonder if that is something that, it's a matter of conscience. My conscience is cool with me having a whole case of beer before the game. You know, that's okay. Because I'm all right with it. I got a high tolerance, you know, so that's okay for me. No, that's a matter of morality, not conscience. And the Bible teaches that clearly. So we don't have to start to blur those into each other, although it's very easy to do so. You know, let's look at the verse again to understand why I put this box here. Yeah, okay. Replacing it with morality, that just opens a whole can of worms, which can cause a lot of problems, and maybe you've already seen these kinds of problems. Here's a quote that, it's probably hard to read, but This is from D.A. Carson. He says, there is a verse that is frequently quoted almost as a defiant gesture by some people who do not know their Bibles very well, but who think that it authorizes their biases. It is Matthew 7:1. Do not judge, or you too will be judged. In an age when philosophical pluralism is on the ascendancy, these nine words might almost be taken as the public confession. So if you're not following what he's saying here, what he's saying is sometimes we might start to get it into our minds like, you can't judge me and my lifestyle. I'm choosing to be immoral. I wanna leave my wife and get married to somebody else. You don't judge or you'll be judged. That's what Jesus said, so he's into this. You know what I mean? And you almost kind of use this as, here's my kind of get out of jail free card. I wave this around whenever I want to get away with something. And, you know, there are absolutely Christians who would use this. Well, I'm pretty sure that God wouldn't want me to be unhappy, and I'm unhappy in my marriage with this family, so, oh, by the way, don't judge or you'll be judged, so deal with that. You know, and these kinds of things, you know, that's not at all what, you know, God is trying to teach here with the idea of me sacrifice to idols. If the blurred line between conscience and morality starts to happen, that's where Satan is starting to make all of his inroads. That's probably why meat sacrifice to idols, although it's a nice idea to understand, is so dangerous because it's so easily misunderstood. You know, if you have a very strong feeling of like, you know, I just feel so convicted that we need to stop watching these TV shows that have all this violence. This has been tearing me up. I'm having nightmares at night. This is terrible. This is ruining my walk with God. And you need to also feel my conviction, and so you can't do it either, because I felt convicted. That subtle difference right there is crossing the line. We're not really following the teaching of meat sacrifice to idols when we're like, I feel so strongly, and you too should feel strongly. That's hard, though, because, you know, a lot of times, for instance, I'm sure a lot of us, when we started our relationship with God, felt like, I feel really convicted by this, I'm really excited by this, I want to tell all my friends about it, right? So it stands to reason that that same motivation, where you're kind of like, oh, I feel so afraid by this thing that's starting to take over, let me go tell all my friends about it. That's a natural thing to do. But it's also really not permitted if it's just purely a matter of conscience, because now we're taking our conscience and judging somebody else with it. This is not just in the Corinthians passage. I encourage you to go ahead and read through, you know, the one in Romans 14 and in 1 Corinthians 8. I think the Romans 14:14 says that, you know, who am I to judge another person's servant? To his own master he will stand or fall, right? So we're not allowed to basically take our conscience and judge other people according to it. They're accountable to God just as I am accountable to God, and that's it. You know what I mean? Now, I should probably also point out that just because we're not allowed to, you know, sort of push our conscience onto other people, that doesn't mean that we're never allowed to talk to people about matters of conscience. That's going too far also. If, for instance, you know, my friend Patrick's like, I go to these Dungeons and Dragons games and I worship Satan, pray for me, right? He doesn't do that, I'm joking, but if I'm kind of like, okay, wow, I will pray for that. And then later he's like, yeah, I'm going to go play this weekend. I can't be like, my conscience tells you not to. But I could be like, you told me that your conscience told you not to. What about that? And raising questions like that is totally fine. And it's actually good because we're supposed to be looking out for each other and people, you know, breaking their conscience. So if he feels disturbed by that, and I, you know, I'm asking him, hey, are you still okay with this, or are you going to be all right? That's not me imparting my conscience onto him. That's just checking on him, and that's totally different, and that's good, and we should be doing things like that. It's when we've decided, like, I don't care what he says, he is going to be bad there. I know because I feel strongly about it. That's when it starts to, you know, pass into the area of badness. So, okay, with verse 30, if I take part in the meal of thankfulness, why am I denounced because of something I thank God for? So what does this teach us? This teaches us that being denounced for a matter of conscience is wrong. And also, that denouncing another person for a matter of conscience is wrong. Which may be very tempting. I would go ahead and say, what about an area like politics? That I feel so strongly I'm right-leaning in here. My crazy mother is becoming really liberal in her politics. Ah! You know what I mean? Like, I have to stop her. Yeah, okay. I mean, I don't think that you should be like, never speak of politics or anything like that. But I can't be like, my conscience is so disturbed by what you're doing. Don't you understand what's at stake? You know, and I am sort of making it a moral issue, and I'm kind of blasting on them. And that's kind of mean sacrifice to idols. She's God's servant. She's accountable to God to that. I think you can still have conversations about it, but when you're starting to be like, what you're doing is morally wrong, what you're doing is against God, that's too far. You don't know. It's meat sacrifice to idols. It's in the subjective. We just don't know what the person's conscience says. Maybe they feel their conscience is leading them to believe whatever those political things are. I myself, I don't care about politics, so it's probably a bad example for me, but I've seen it. I mean, I'm under the impression that my family doesn't care about politics until they did in this last election, and they started going crazy, and I was just like, wow, this is really disturbing, because in my mind, this is something that's each person's got their own conscience, and now it's becoming a battleground, and that's scary, because that feels like the kind of thing that Satan would use to start to divide people, keep them from looking out for each other, because we're upset at each other over some issue. Okay. So let's wrap up the actual passage before we draw out some conclusions. So in 31, you have, so whether you eat or drink or whatever you do, do it all for the glory of God. Do not cause anyone to stumble, whether Jews or Greeks or the church of God. Even as I try to please everyone in every way, for I am not seeking my own good, but the good of the many, so that they may be saved. See that right there. The bottom line on this is he's trying to find a way to contextualize as much as he possibly can so that as many people as possible can hear the message of God, come to be saved, and to go to heaven forever. That is what is ultimately much more important than some of these much smaller issues of conscience. Follow my example as I follow the example of Christ. Okay, so there is our passage. Some of the conclusions out of this, you know, one, receiving Christ, as we talked about earlier, enters you into the body of Christ, and it is a very, very rewarding experience. You know, having hundreds of people that are part of your family who would lay down their life for you, who would look out for you, who would do anything for you, there's nothing like that. You can't really get that except through the bond that we share through the Holy Spirit. And it's something that I really do hope you consider if you have not already made that decision. And second, the matters of conscience are very confusing, but they're also navigable. I mean, it is something where you can find a way through it. If you're confused about a particular issue, then it's good. You know, find somebody who maybe is a little bit more experienced, who maybe knows their Bible more, or even just find somebody else who is a peer and talk it out with them and be like, what do you think? I feel this way. Am I getting too off track here? Or do you think that that's reasonable? Or maybe you're kind of like, does this issue count as morality? Because I can sort of find some verses-ish. Maybe it's moral, maybe it's conscience, like, I'm not sure. Talk it out with people, you know, see if they have anything to contribute. I mean, that is a really good way to be able to understand this idea better. Plus, we should be talking out with each other just to understand each other's tendencies and sensitivities of conscience. Anyway, now, what symptoms could there be that you are misunderstanding the concept of me sacrifice to idols, or just issues of conscience, if you prefer? Well, first, when it comes to matters of conscience, maybe it even comes to this teaching, and you're sitting in your chair thinking to yourself, I thank God I am not like other people, like this tax collector. You know, you probably have got some issues with meat sacrificed to idols. If you're thinking, yeah, I'm so glad that I'm really good with this. Oh man, Jimmy over there. You hearing this? Jimmy? You know, Jimmy's not real. But you start to think this way where you're kind of like, I hope that this other person finally understands that they can't judge me anymore. Meh. Or something like that. Odds are you have probably got some sort of misunderstanding in this area when you're starting to think that way, when you are kind of like, I've got this right. I have judged these other people's and their consciences to be wrong. Ew. It's a symptom. It doesn't prove positive. I'm just saying, if you think that way, and I definitely do think that way, so you'll be in company with me. I don't know if that's good company, but you'll be in my company if you think this way, because a lot of times I'm sort of like, blah, I can tell they don't understand this correctly. That makes me better than them, or something like that. A second symptom? Maybe you can't remember the last time your conscience was stirring at you at all. You know, you're like, yeah, matters the conscience, right? I don't have to worry about it because I don't have a conscience. I do whatever I want and I feel fine. It's awesome. That is probably not normal. I mean, I think that we probably should have some feeling of conscience, and maybe we should feel at times some tug or some pull. We do read that it is very possible in the Bible to sear your conscience, yeah, and that is not good. That is not something that God's kind of like, ha, you're so faithful, you've seared your conscience off. That's bad. You know, that's not something that's good. We should at times, you know, kind of feel that tug. A third thing, okay, maybe you feel like your conscience is awesome. Everyone else has got a seared conscience. Why won't they feel strongly about this thing that's obviously so important? I can't believe they feel like it's okay to go to these parties. I can't believe they think it's okay to watch these shows, these movies. Wow, they must have no soul, you know what I mean? So maybe that would be an indicator that you also have got some misunderstanding with meat sacrificed to idols. So there are my symptoms for you to kind of consider. For application, I think it is really important that you share your areas of weaknesses with others in the church. And that's difficult. It is very difficult. Partly because you might not really even know who you would even talk to. Maybe you're in a church like this and you're looking around a room and you're like, there's like 70 strangers here. Which one do I pick? That's probably not a good sign. I mean, you know, the body of Christ is described as something that's really cohesive and we're all involved in each other's lives. We should have closer friends. You know, we should have those closer relationships we can go and talk to. There are a lot of people in this room I know are in smaller groups, home churches, things like that. It's a great reason to get involved in those. Sometimes involved in men's groups or women's groups where you can talk about, you know, issues of marriage or whatever it is. Those areas meetings are really good to be able to give you a venue for sharing your weaknesses. And then also, too, learning about your friends' areas of struggle with their conscience and learning how to you can help them, how you can assist them. Because without those, you know, a lot of what we just went over is kind of not going to be that relevant. I mean, it's really hard to be sensitive to somebody else's conscience if you're not sure what anybody else's conscience is ever telling them. So, but that takes work. It does take work to be able to understand and remember who's got these issues, how should we be sensitive, how can we come together and be sensitive. And working so that you can deprive yourself of freedom is like really hard sell. I mean, it's hard to convince people that that's the cool thing to do, but it's an important thing to do. It is an important thing so that we can maintain people's own relationship with God. It's important, too, that we are willing to push out and try to contextualize with those people who don't have a relationship with God, because, you know, if we just stay in our comfort, we'll never be able to reach those people. Somebody made a difficult decision, went out of their comfort so that we could know about it. And we should be thankful for that. So, you know, for that reason, I think it's worth kind of realizing maybe I need to get over my wild neighbors and their madness and their cookouts. They're always being so crazy and I just judge them. Maybe I need to find a way to kind of get over that and see if I can't go over there and befriend them and maybe even take part in those kinds of things. Maybe I can tell them about Christ. But that's hard. Okay. So, oh, yes. I think they'll probably pass that. I'm not good at this part. Okay. Everyone tell us what you think. You can drop your feedback card in the giving basket, which is probably going around. If you're a new guest, you're not here to give money to this church. It's the basket is for people who feel like they belong to this church and this is their home. So you can give money if you feel like that's the case. And if not, then, you know, you are a guest and don't worry about, giving money, but you can give this feedback card if you feel like it. Also, yeah, okay. We just said that. Never mind. Ha! Okay, so if you are a parent and you have children in Oasis, they will be released at 11:45, maybe. I mean, I think you should get them by 11:45 is what they're saying. But so that is something that we should do. And then, oh, yes, if you have any sort of questions or comments or anything like that, we can take those now. Also, if you want to talk afterward, if you can find me, then I will talk to you. That's the if. I might disappear. Okay, go ahead.
Thanks for this. This is great. You know, I grew up in a very rule-based home. And there were serious consequences for violation of those rules.
Mm.
And so growing up, I didn't grow up in a church. And so when we first started looking into a church, I could have so landed in a rule-based church and would have been so happy.
Mm-hmm.
Because there would be the black and the white. And there's no gray, so don't worry about that. But God's sense of humor placed me in a grace-based church where in the beginning – my conscience was violated by every word out of anybody's mouth.
Yeah.
It was super sensitive and like to the point where I probably would not have kept going if it wasn't for the grace of God that kept pushing me and pushing those limits. You know, I was projecting my rule-based ethos on my husband and almost killed our marriage. Like, I don't want you ever to leave the house ever. Because then you might come into contact with X, Y, and Z, and then what are you going to do with it? You know, and so it was passages like this that it was hard to read because not only is there gray area, and I am so not good with gray area then, but there was Paul saying, you know, there are weak consciences. Well, I'm the weak conscience, so everyone should stop violating my weak conscience.
Right.
You know, and so it was interesting to be challenged, like, maybe I got to shore that up. And it's been fun now looking back that over the years of God shoring that up so that I can wade into waters that were once uncomfortable to me to then not be offended or not be shocked, but then to be sympathetic and empathetic for when individuals are in that area. Because I was there not so long ago. And then he uncovers, oh, wait, this still bothers you. So let's work on this. You know, type thing. So I love the fact that God doesn't leave us there. But then he has that, you know, God was very sensitive to me at that time, but he pushed me, which was not fun at the time. But,
I'm sure.
But it's fun now because looking back, I know that there's growth in that. So thanks for that.
Absolutely. I appreciate you sharing that because I think that it is very difficult to be the one to say, admit, I'm the one with the weaker conscience. I mean, it feels like, okay, now I'm going to be picked last at kickball or something. You know what I mean? Like, I'm the bad person in the room. But it's true. And, you know, it's helpful. I think a lot of people, if they're being honest with themselves, also have weak consciences, but they're maybe trying to, like, fool themselves into thinking otherwise. But, yeah, I appreciate that. Thanks. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's important, too, to remember that since we're fallen, sometimes our conscience can just be a little bit off, you know, just thinking about, like, some of us are heightenedly sensitive to things or something, or you even mentioned the seared conscience. So I think it's really important to be able to spend time in God's word or with other believers to kind of get our conscience as connected with God as we can, just to kind of, you know, if there is any off, like some people are just like, I have a strong feeling or something about this and can often confuse, like, that's what God would want with just the fact that we have sometimes our indicators a little bit off.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely not going to be proof positive that every time I have a strong feeling and I feel a sense of, like, foreboding that that's from God. I mean, that could very easily be from the other side. I mean, that could be, you know, Satan trying to put some sort of weighing guilt upon you, which we know that he does. So, yeah, you shouldn't obviously just equate this is matter or this conscience, this is from God every single time because it doesn't always work that way. Yeah. Cool, yeah.
I was just thinking about, you know, there's so much admonition to be gentle and loving to the person that is weak in conscience. But the person that doesn't understand the difference between, you know, asserting their conscience over you and asserting, you know, and expressing an understanding of morality over what you're doing and they try to control what you're doing because it's their the difference between their pulled down by it as opposed to they're just offended by it.
Yeah.
But we're called to be just as loving to those people because they're as weak in conscience as the other side.
Absolutely. I'm very glad you mentioned that because I think sometimes we can get together, especially in our church, we're kind of like, we understand grace and this and that. We're really good and kind of look down our nose at the person who is for trying to project their conscience. Yeah, okay, look, they're not right to do that, but neither are we right to all of a sudden put the mark of Cain on them and they're terrible and you know that sort of thing because, you know, we're kind of doing the same thing just even in that act. I mean, we're passing the same judgment. It really is not going to be productive at all. And yeah, so much language about trying to be sensitive and be gentle and to be, you know, loving with those people and, you know, following the example of Christ. Cool. Yeah. Oh, sorry. They're going to give you a mic.
I was just curious. I understand being sensitive to other people's conscience and being gracious and what we're seeking. The bottom line is to be effective lovers of people as God would call us. But is there ever an opportunity or a time where we can challenge those who are weak in conscience? I mean, you talked about your friend who was a little hesitant to go to the tailgating party, and you were like, oh, come on, come on. But I know for me, I became a Christian or I accepted Christ because a girlfriend of mine in high school challenged me to go to a party, and I was like, a party? And it turned out to be a Bible study with a party afterwards. So didn't know if there was ever...
I do think that there is. I'm glad you brought this up. I mean, again... The topic is very broad. I mean, we could probably take another couple of weeks and continue to talk about it. Yes, I think you can push people. I think, you know, you have to be delicate about it. I guarantee you I was not being delicate with my roommate. I was just giving him a hard time and sort of ridiculing him for having a sensitive conscience, which is not productive. I mean, I think that if you, for instance, were to show them the kind of passages that that we went over and help them to kind of, you know, maybe get with God and see, is this matter, are you holding this matter of conscience on the same level as a morality issue? Maybe you need to really consider that. And I think, too, you know, some of the examples of being able to see, well, Jesus went to parties, the Matthew's party, probably much worse than a lot of the parties that we'd ever go and attend. And he did it because he loved those people. And those people were hungry, and those people needed to hear that and stuff. So I think when you bring up examples like that, and you're kind of reasoning with people and sort of bringing them along and trying to teach them the principles, that can lead to them progressing. But I think when you're kind of like, just stop it, that's not, you know, the kind of... That's not challenging people as much as it is just kind of slapping them around because you're irritated with them, which is easy to do also. But, yeah. Okay. Cool. Well, oh, we got one more. All right. Oh, two more. Okay.
I have a question.
Yes.
If a lot of morality is, like, principle-based, so let's take, like, the idea of greed or, let's just take greed.
Sure.
It would seem, I guess my question is, developing your own personal conscience on how you are greedy would be a positive thing, right?
I would think so.
Yeah, and so taking biblical principles, while we don't want to project our conscience, don't we want to develop a clear understanding of what our conscience is on applying a lot of biblical principles?
I think developing... You know, your own, like, language and understanding your conscience and understanding how that relates to principles. Absolutely. I think that that is very good. I think that some of this, you know, realizing if you have a sensitive conscience and you're like, you know what, putting me in this situation could inflame the greed that I have. But the crossing the line when you say, therefore, you can't do it either, that's when it becomes different. You know what I mean? And learning what your own personal sort of triggers are and things like that. Absolutely. It's great. It's just, it is tempting. It is very tempting to be like, I'm helping them. And maybe you even are helping people in some cases, which in some ways can almost make it worse because you feel like you're doing the right thing, to then be like, let's just make this rule for everybody and then we'll all be safe. It doesn't always work that way, obviously. But yeah.
Okay. First of all, there are absolute moral guidelines.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
No question. But I love this topic, this teaching, and our willingness to deal with the tricky matter of talking about principle instead of old school law, right? And mm-hmm. so much of religious practice across time, and you know, has been all about pleasing God by following rules, and that's the commonplace thing. Because the Bible deals with this very real need we have for principle, understanding, and practice, it's always drawn me in to the credibility, believability, integrity of the Bible. It doesn't shy away from all of the tricky topics that are necessary to be dealt with in the existence of mankind as it is today, as we all experience in our lives. And just one other little thing, as you were going through these topics today, what kept jumping to my mind was the John 10:10 passage where Jesus tells us that I came that you might have life and have it abundantly. Mm-hmm. Living life on a principle basis is living an abundant life.
Absolutely. I think, you know, if you think of God as being our Father, and we are his children, and we're different, and he allows that difference. You know, he's not looking for, like, let's make a bunch of human robots. Here are the rules, period. You know what I mean? If you have been a parent, sometimes you realize, I take one approach with one child and one with another, and they're different, maybe, because of different ages, maybe because of different personalities or different things like that. And God treats us that way, I think, with these matters of conscience, that sometimes this is going to be beneficial for this person, whereas that person over there, different. And he allows us to be different, and he does give us that big gray area, I think, to kind of move around and have differences, and that, you know, he kind of loves us and wants us to have a more abundant life, not just, you know, 7 billion people all following the exact same thing every single time. So, yeah, cool. All right. Well, I think they pass the microphone around to pray, and then I guess I will close up for us. So we'll do that.